Welcome to episode 30 of the House of Jordans podcast. I'm Christina, and you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Christina's PC, KristinasPC. And I'm here with
Brian. You can find me on Instagram at Jodin Cards, J-O-E-D-I-N Cards. And I'm here with
Chris. You can find me on Instagram at Chris underscore H-O-J, and you can find me on Twitter at House of Jordans. You can find us all on YouTube at House of Jordans. That's also where you can find Nick, a.k.a. Stiff Arm Wax, the Invisible Member, and the esteemed producer, video producer of this show. All right, so let me do a quick show preview of episode 30, a very deep and interesting show for you guys today. First up, we have reactions to Christina's interview of Kevin Panini's director of sales. Then we have a story about failing in attempting to flip Baker Mayfield cards. Then on the flip side of the coin, we have a story where we review our Luka collecting after 1 year of collecting him, which is a much more rosy, optimistic outlook. Then we're going to get into a little bit of collecting philosophy. I'm calling it BBCWW, buy blue chips, wait and watch. Then we're going to hear from Brian on some of his hobby wins and losses, and we will conclude with mail days. Now, before we get to the substance of the show, we have two quick announcements.
Yes, announcement number one, our live stream giveaway. So with tremendous gratitude to our friends who helped us break the 1,000 subscriber mark on YouTube, we are giving away the 2018-19 Prism Cello box, my quarantine box, this Sunday, May 24th at 10 p.m. Eastern. We will be running a live stream on our YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed and check that little bell to get the notifications about when we go live and when new videos come out. We have a list of the 464 qualifying entrants into our giveaway. Check Chris's Instagram or Twitter to see the list and make sure your name is on there if you qualified for the contests. We will plug all 464 names into a randomizer and start whittling down the list. First, we'll narrow it down to 77. The first name on the list will then win a small prize. We'll narrow it down again to 45 names. The first name will then win a prize. And then we'll narrow it down to 23 names. Are you seeing the trend here? And guess what? The first name will win a prize. Once we have those 23 names, we will then run a final randomizer, and the giveaway box will go to the first name listed. Once again, that's this Sunday, the 24th of May at 10 p.m. Eastern, only on the House of Jordan YouTube channel. If you win, you need to claim your prize within 1 week, 7 days. Otherwise, we will give away your box to the second name on the list.
And announcement number two, So the Last Dance is done. We have recorded all of our takes on YouTube live streams immediately after each episode, so we're not going to include any Last Dance takes in the House of Jordans podcast because we have roughly 5 hours worth of takes available for you on YouTube if you want to hear some of our thoughts on The Last Dance. And this all can be accessed via a playlist on our YouTube channel called Reactions to The Last Dance. All right, first topic, Christina's interview of Kevin, Panini's director of sales. So I was very pleased, floored, in fact, when GoGTS Live, a.k.a. The Hobby's web show, which broadcasts live Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern and has been going strong for many years, they tweeted out a glowing review of Christina's interview of Kevin Hake, Panini's director of sales. They said, quote, "This is one of the best interviews in the hobby we have ever watched. Great job, Christina." So, Christina, how did you secure an interview with one of the most important decision makers in the hobby?
I have no idea.
Well, it started at the bullpen.
No, it did. It started at the bullpen. I met Kevin Hake at a Panini night at Bullpen, which is our local card shop that the three of us go to pretty often on the regular. We were invited to Panini night. showed up, met Kevin. Kevin stuck around late into the night to answer questions
for
and talk
hours.
To everyone so long.
For hours.
And we actually ended up leaving, which is surprising if you know us, before he did. And
it's a testament to the man's durability.
It is. And when we were leaving, he was like, if you guys are ever in Dallas, throw me a line and like I'll give you a tour of Panini. And I was like, I'm not the girl. You say those things too, because we planned a trip to Dallas pretty much just to go to Panini and Beckett.
And also, to see Luca play.
Also see Luca play, and got this very nice jersey.
Yes, we did. Fresh from American Airlines. So.
Yes. And did a tour of Panini, hung out with Kevin for a while, met a bunch of people at Panini. And when Christina's Corner spun off from House of Jordans, because let's face it, I can't be contained. I immediately thought Kevin would be an amazing person to talk to. And he surprisingly agreed.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Okay, so let's react to some of the stuff that Kevin said.
Sure. So one of my lines of questioning came to a head when I mentioned the huge PSA pop report for Luca Prism PSA 10 rookie card, which is now over 10,000. And I asked Kevin how Panini feels about that. We had been discussing the rising secondary market values of unopened wax, which Kevin said Panini monitors very closely, as well as the rise in popularity of Panini's inserts this year. Kevin offered some incredibly nuanced thoughts on these topics. He said that on one hand, Panini exercises caution to make sure they produce products in a responsible fashion. Prism is a mass-produced product because it has such a massive following both domestically and internationally. He even gave a shout-out to the Philippines, Australia, and China, and many other great countries that have incredible collector bases that love Prism. And the market certainly has the demand required to keep the price of the Luca Prism rookie PSA 10 climbing higher and higher. So at the current level of transaction volume, the card sells 38 times per week and nearly 2,000 times per year. The current market value is $524, which is the second highest price it has ever sold for. The highest price point for the card occurred early in March of this year, 2020, when it briefly eclipsed $600. This was right before taking a dip back down to $400 at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. So keep in mind, this card sold for roughly $70 prior to the 1920 season. Kevin also pointed out that on the other hand, Panini is concerned about the exponentially increasing secondary market values of their unopened products because it prices out collectors and because the prices can get so inflated that it virtually guarantees that the box is too expensive to open. He said that Panini's print runs are constrained by the need for, quote, player assets, which means autographs and memorabilia, which limits how much product they can produce. He seemed to hint at Panini wanting to produce even more product to help keep it affordable for a wider range of collectors. And he seemed cautiously optimistic that the recent rise in popularity of the, quote, paper and ink cards, which we all know and love, meaning inserts that don't include the assets, could allow Panini to do just that. His focus is on collectors having the best possible experience when opening boxes. And he feels that Panini isn't best serving collectors when they cannot open wax because of the inflated price.
Yes.
So,
wow.
What do you guys think?
Well,
of the interview?
That was a
wait, before
great
you go
recap.
On, I just want to say thank you to both of you because I threw my outline of questions around this group before my interview with Kevin, and you both added some really great questions, and I appreciate you guys coming in on the assist, the shadow assist. So I'm going to give you credit now that a lot of the great questions you heard were from these gentlemen. So I just want to say that.
No, you came up with plenty of great ones yourself. And so one of the things that was so interesting to me, like he mentioned that there was an email chain going around the Panini office where they were discussing the meteoric rise in prices of the 2012 LeBron cards, Kobe cards, Tom Brady cards.
For the Prism, the first year Prism cards.
First year Prism. And he said it was astonishing in the context of the fact that Panini almost did away with Prism at one point because they just weren't sure what was in the future for that brand. And so that indicated to me, see, one of the things I was really curious about that we all were really curious about was tracking the secondary market. Does Panini keep like a close watch on this? Are they searching eBay as feverishly as we are? Are they focused on other things? You know, does that, how important is the secondary market to their business model? And like, he made it abundantly clear that they monitor it very closely. He and his department specialize in looking at unopened wax, but they're also obviously tracking very closely the value of singles on the secondary market as well. And he expressed an interesting concern and outlook and perspective that I hadn't considered yet, but that makes a lot of sense. His concern is that boxes are getting so expensive that if, you know, a collector ends up with one eventually and wants to open it, there's a real risk that the contents inside are going to be a disappointment from the perspective of how much money was invested in the box. And at first I struggled with that because I was like, well, but isn't really the box value based on the contents inside of it? So like a box value goes up, like 1920 NBA Hoops goes up because the inserts inside of it are going up. But that's only part of the story, because the other part of the story is that there's speculation and inflation going on with respect to the value of unopened boxes that's happening above and beyond and on top of the increase in value of the singles that are contained within those boxes. So like, he was really concerned about collectors getting priced out, and then if they actually do end up with one of these boxes and open it, that the value of the contents inside isn't going to satisfy them from the perspective of how much money they spent on it. And so like, for Panini, that's a really big concern because they are focused on the consumer experience. And like, he said something that really resonated with me, which was, you can't, there's very few things in this world that match the joy and the exhilaration and the thrill and the pleasure of opening a hobby box. And so he wants consumers at the end of the day to be opening their product and to be getting the cards out and to be putting them into their collection and enjoying them. And that was a perspective that I hadn't thought of before. And so, you know, that leads to some interesting permutations, because one of them is that like, he was very concerned about being constrained with releasing product in the sense that they only have so many autographs, they only have so many memorabilia, they only have so many player assets that they can include into their products, and because of that they can't make more after a certain point. And so from the perspective of supply and demand, obviously, there's not enough boxes to go around right now, and that's one of the reasons why the price on boxes can get speculated and driven up to such an extent. So, like, one possible solution to this is, you know, kind of scary as it sounds, is that they just print more. And they're seeing, like you said, that the possibility of, you know, paper and ink cards becoming so popular will allow them to do just that. So there's a lot to think about there in terms of what are print runs going to look like in the next few years. He said that Panini is always going to be very responsible with that stuff, and I believe him. He was extremely well-spoken and thoughtful. That really cut through the whole interview. So a lot of stuff to think about there. Those are some of my kind of bullet points.
20 minutes later, Brian, do you have a comment?
I mean, I think that wraps up pretty much. No, I mean, I think it was, I mean, first off, the interview was awesome. There's so much good content in it. And, you know, this quick recap couldn't cover everything that was involved in it. So go and check it out so you can get the full experience and get it straight from the, you know, the source. But in general, I think, you know, in terms of the current state of wax prices, it is like concern. And, I want people to be able to open up products too, and like,
I
want to
open up products.
Like,
yeah.
Comparing it to like 2018, like I was able to like buy some products at least for that and to open it. But now like for, you know, these products, it's not the same case. And, you know, you have the function now, they're doing the Dutch auctions as well, which is interesting. And he talked about that a little bit. So there's these different mechanisms now that they're happening for the secondary market and for opening, you know, boxes. But it is interesting from the standpoint too that it is the feedback loop with, you know, the insert prices going up and then hence the prices of the boxes going up. You know, he also talked about how Zion and Ja are a big reason for why this, you know, year's products are such high prices. But you know, I'd only imagine that this year's products is way more printed than 2018. So, you know, you still have Trey and you have Luka in, you know, 2018. So it's an interesting perspective, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So we covered some topics. The boys then covered more. Make sure you go watch the interview. Like Brian said, we talk about so much more than what we just recapped for you. If you haven't already watched it, why haven't you? Like, what the heck, guys? And Kevin also dives into Panini's sleeper product, so you'll definitely want to go check that out.
But you're already too late because it just
I will tell you that I've been watching it sell all day today, and now it is sold out on Dave and Adams, and you cannot find a case of this on eBay right now. So you already missed it, but you could potentially go to your hobby shop or call and do curbside and get the scoop before some locals. So make sure you go check that out and listen closely to his sleeper product. It's now available on the House of Jordan's YouTube channel, and there are a few episodes of Christina's Corner already on our YouTube, including an interview with Matt, also known as PSA Collector, which came out on Thursday.
It's another great one.
Yes.
Another great one. Okay, well, that was fun. Let's move on to the next topic here. This topic I've titled Flipping Baker Fail. Last June, I bought 9 Baker Mayfield Raw Prism rookie cards on eBay. The average price was about $30, excluding shipping. And if you assume the shipping is about $3 each, the average price was about $33 each. In total, the amount I spent was $294.48. I graded them all with PSA and got a pretty disappointing return. I got 7 9s and 2 10s. So the cost of grading was $10 each, and that brings the total spent to $384.48. The cards tanked in value last season, as most of you probably know, alongside with the Browns. So I just held on to them. And then I finally sold all 9 in the last few weeks, like just a few weeks ago. So I sold 5 of the PSA 9s as a lot for $150. And pro tip, it's actually easier to move cards like this in a lot than it is individually for whatever reason. I sold 2 other PSA 9s individually for $30 each. I sold 2 PSA 10s as a lot for $260. So the gross income was $440. And when you take away shipping and fees, the net was about $334. So $384 spent, $334 net income. That's a loss of $50. So that made me feel pensive. So what are some of the lessons that I learned from this? Well, the first one is that not every flip attempt is successful, but you should be proud of your successes and your failures, because your failures can be as profitable to you as your successes if you learn from them. So what did I learn? Number one, factor in the fact that PSA turnaround times are really, really slow. I submitted those cards in mid-June via a 45-day service, hoping to have them back by the NFL preseason. I'm sure many people are cackling now when they hear that. But this was when the Baker hype was high, and I was hoping to capitalize on that going into the season. But instead, I didn't get these cards back until midway through the season, when Baker values were in the basement. Lesson number two that I learned was buying raw cards on eBay half a year after release is a recipe to get a bunch of mediocre grades. I was just too late to the game. Most of the good raws had been snatched up already, and my best hope was for someone to somehow pull a fresh Baker and throw it on eBay, which wasn't happening too often so late after the product's release. And note that my brother, Stiff Arm Wax, by comparison, he submitted 4 Bakers, he had pulled all of them, and all 4 got PSA 10s. So the gem rate on this Baker, according to PSA's pop report, is 46%. And so had 4 of my 9 just gotten 10s, like as is the gem rate indicates would have been the case, I would have had 2 more PSA 10s to sell that would have netted me $200 extra. Total, that would have put me at plus 150 on my initial $380 outlay. So those had just 2 of the cards gone from PSA 10s instead of being PSA 9s, it would have been a profitable venture. But it wasn't, because they didn't grade well. And then that brings me to lesson number 3. Flip cards that you like. Now, this might seem like counterintuitive device, because if you like the card, then you want to keep it rather than flip it, right? Yes, that's exactly the point. You will prefer to keep the card rather than sell it, which can help you ride out the market if it tanks. Once I had realized that I could pretty much break even on the Bakers, I just took them to the market and I let them fly. I just didn't enjoy having those cards sitting around. They're not collectible to me. I probably could have held them for a few more months and I maybe could have even turned a profit, but I'd rather take the $334 and put it back into something else that I like. And even if I'm sitting on cards that are appreciating, but they're of a player that I just don't enjoy collecting, it's just not that fun. And that's the thing. It's super important to keep cards fun. The reason I love the hobby so much is because it's fun. This is a simple, simple principle, but it's so easy to forget the deeper you get into the hobby. If I wanted to work, there are better jobs available to me than flipping cards. The hobby commands so much of my time and attention because it's fun, and it's not very fun to have piles of cards that I wouldn't want to have in my PC. So that's the final lesson. Always remember to keep the hobby fun. All right, and now let's look at the flip side of the coin, so to speak. Topic number three, Luca collecting 1 year in the books. Can you believe it? Christina and I sent 16 Lucas to PWCC for their June auction. This is the most gut-wrenching hobby decision we've ever made. I hemmed and hawed about this for days before finally packing up the cards and shipping them out. We already miss them, and our PC feels lighter and inferior without them.
We literally had a pile that, like, we would go through, like, every day at least once and be like, no, like, let's put this in the maybe pile instead of the definitely send. Let's put this in the keep pile, but it still sits out. And those cards got shuffled around and shuffled around until finally we came with 16 to sell.
You know, it feels like, now that these cards, 16 Luca cards are out of our PC, it feels like someone took a chunk of our hobby identity away from us. It just doesn't feel good. Now,
it feels so small.
Now, I also expect that these cards, these 16, they're going to be more valuable a year from now than they are right now. I'm pretty confident in that. But as I noticed that we were approaching 1 year of Luca collecting, I recognized that we'd been incredibly lucky, and that there is an opportunity now to recoup our initial outlay and have an incredible PC left over. So I sent in the fewest number of Lucas possible to get us very close to recouping what we have spent on Lucas. So the theory behind why we sent these cards to PWCC, it's twofold. First, it is to take advantage of the current Luca hype, as his market is probably the hottest it's ever been. A good barometer of that is his Prism Silver PSA 10, which is currently selling for $2,300, which is the highest price it has ever maintained. Right before COVID-19 shut down the leagues, it got up to $2,200. Then it plunged all the way down to $1,500, and now it's back up to $2,300, even higher than it was selling in late November and early December, which was the peak of what we have dubbed as Luforia. Now, the other part of the plan here was to sell these cards before the NBA comes back, as we are pretty confident, based on the NBA coverage that we follow, that the NBA will be coming back to finish the regular season this year, albeit without fans, obviously. Right now, we are in an unprecedented moment for basketball cards. The hobby is fueled by anticipation, and during the long haul of a regular season, I think we can all testify to this, we overanalyze stuff, we get bogged down in what seem like foregone conclusions about which teams will ultimately prevail, and we tend to get conservative. But during the off season, we develop new hopes and ambitions for what can happen next year, and that's not just hobbyists and collectors, that's sports fans everywhere. Well, we've got a very unique off-season moment going on right now, where we basically know which teams will be in the playoffs, and we know how everyone performed in the regular season, but we also have had plenty of time to develop and renew our hope and optimism for how the playoffs will pan out. So anyone who is in the playoffs has a lot of hope foisted onto them right now, a level of hope that normally is not built into teams and players going into a normal playoff run. So the playoffs themselves, they already have a certain level of anticipation built in as they're looming around the corner during the regular course of a season. But we've never seen playoffs hope and off-season hope get combined at the same time like this. And the result is a sense of anticipation that I personally have never seen in the hobby before. And well, we got some good news regarding the return of the NBA today. I want to send a shout out to Shaps Cards on Instagram for sending over this story. ESPN.com reported today that, quote, NBA teams are expecting the league offices to issue guidelines around June 1st that will allow franchises to start recalling players who've left their markets, Luka,
Porzingis,
as a first step towards a formal ramp up for the season's resumption. Barring an unforeseen turn of events, many NBA owners, executives, and NBA Players Association elders believe that Commissioner Adam Silver will green light the return to play in June, with games expected to resume sometime before the end of July, sources said. So our 16 cards will close with PWCC towards the end of June. That's right in time for Luka hype to be nearing its peak as collectors look to stock up on his stuff before the Mavericks start their playoff run. We probably could capitalize even more if our stuff didn't list until late July, right before the NBA play is expected to resume. So maybe we'll ask PWCC to hold back until the July auction. I'm not sure. But we're going to run it either way in June or July. So this is a very bittersweet moment, sending some of our cherished Lukas out for auction, and it provides an opportunity to review our Luka collecting adventure 1 year in. I would say that we truly started collecting Luka back when we picked up his National Treasures RPA on May 13th of last year. Prior to that, we'd just been ripping boxes, and we had pulled a few Luka Silvers, but we hadn't begun to PC.
And pink cracked ice.
And pink cracked ice, but we had not begun to PC him yet.
You had a lot of Luka cards, though.
True.
It began when we took the plunge with his National Treasures RPA, and we'd watched him have a spectacular rookie season, and we saw the Mavericks acquired Porzingis, and we studied Luka's track record of success in Europe, and we noticed that former Yugoslavia had been consistently producing NBA talent for decades, and that he just might become the Michael Jordan of European NBA players. That's the hope, anyway. So let me recap some of the stuff that we're sending to PWCC. It comes out to just shy of $30,000 worth in total value of cards, and I'm going to explain how I came to that figure in just a moment. Now, what's cool about this, and what's why I sort of set that as the benchmark, is that we've only put about $30,000 into Luka cards. So assuming that these cards hit the values that I think they will, it'll get us pretty close to recouping our Luka outlay. And then after we've done that, I'll show you the Luka stuff we're hanging on to, which is all pretty much house money, as they say. So, Christina, would you please help me list off the 16 cards, and I will fill in the details.
Okay. First up, we had six BGS graded cards. The first one is 2018 Select Premier Level Die Cut Blue out of 249. This was a BGS 9.5.
So the price we paid for this in December of 2019 was $225. The last comp was $380 2 weeks ago. I put the estimated sale value when this finally runs at auction at about $400.
Next up, we have the 2018 Panini Status Pursuit die cut, BGS 9.5.
So we paid $600 for this card. There never has been a comp recorded for this card. The last raw copy sold for $813 back in March of this year. I put the expected sale value at auction to be $1,500.
Next up, we have the 2018 Select Courtside Gold out of 10 at a BGS 9.
So the price we paid in the last comp are identical because we were the buyer of the last time this card sold. That was back in November of last year. We paid $3,050 for it. So because there are no recent comps at all, I used a methodology that I call historically correlated multipliers to predict the value, and I won't go into too much of the nuance of that, but basically, I look at what this card was worth, and I look at a comparable card that sells more frequently during that same window of time. I see how much that card, the comparable card, has gone up or down, and I apply that same percentage gain to the subject card, which here is the Select Courtside Gold. And the baseline card that I was using was the Select Courtside Silver PSA 10. And based on that baseline, I expect that the Courtside Gold out of 10 BGS 9 is going to sell for about $5,700.
All right. The fourth card is a Panini National Convention 2018-19 Select Pink out of 10. This was graded a BGS 9.
So we paid $400 for this card. Unbelievable. Wow. Back in October of 2019, before the season began. There are no comparable sales of a BGS 9. The last raw copy sold about 2 weeks ago for $2,200. I'm pegging the estimated sale value at $2,500 for this card.
Fifth card is the 2018 Donruss Optic Holo BGS 8.5.
So we paid $54 for this Luka Optic Holo rookie card in October 2019 before the season began. The last comp for BGS 8.5 was $405 at the end of March. I'm pegging the estimated sale value to be $500 for this card.
And the final BGS graded card we have is the 2018 Panini Prism Blue Yellow Green, which I pulled at a BGS 8.
Christina pulled it. It got sent to the customer. The customer sold it back to Christina. It took a trip across the country. It ultimately ended up back with us. We paid $225 for this card in December of 2019. There are no comparable sales of a BGS 8. The last raw copy sold for $1,000 in April of 2020. So I'm pegging the estimated sale value of this card at $1,250.
All right, so that wraps up the BGS, and now we have 10 PSA graded cards, the first of which is the 2018 Panini Status Pursuit Die Cut, yes, that does sound familiar, PSA 8.
Right, so this is the second of the Panini Status Pursuit Die Cuts in this lot that we sent to PWCC. The price we paid on New Year's Day 2020 was $300. There are no comparable sales of PSA 8s. Like I said before, the last raw sold for $813 back in March. I put the expected sale value at $1,000.
The second card that we have on this list is 2018 Panini Select Premier Level Die Cut Gold out of 10 PSA 9.
So the second Luka rookie select gold card here, the only one that we never got our hands on was the Concourse. This one, like you said, is a premier die cut gold. We paid $1,000 for this card, this PSA 9, back in October of 2019. There are no comparable sales of a PSA 9. In fact, the last time any copy of this card sold was a raw back in May of 2019. And it, once more, using the historically correlated multiplier with the baseline of the select courtside silver PSA 10, the predicted value for this card is $4,500.
All right. We next have the 2018 Panini Prism Mosaic Gold out of 10 at a PSA 10.
We paid.
This was a tough one.
The price paid in the last comparable sale are once again the same thing because we were the people who bought the most recent copy. It sold on October 23rd, 2019. Little numerology for you. We paid $2,200 on that fateful October 23rd day. The predicted value for this one, using a historically correlated multiplier with the baseline of the Mosaic base PSA 10 Luka card, is $7,800.
Yeah.
What's the next card?
The next card is the 2018 Panini Select Premier Level Die Cut Blue out of 249 at a PSA 10.
So we paid $275 for this card back in March. The latest comp is $332. That was also in March, a few weeks later. I peg the expected sale value of this card to be $500.
And we have the 2018 Panini Select Premier Level Die Cut Blue out of,
it's the same card, but it's a PSA 9.
Okay.
The price paid was $100.
I forgot we had three of these. I was like, I already read two.
The price paid was $100 in November of 2019. The latest comp is $281 from a few weeks ago. I pegged the expected sale value at $350.
And we have three copies of the 2018 Panini Donruss Optic Holo at PSA 9.
So these three copies were all acquired back in October of last year. The average price paid was $60 each, or $180 total. The latest comp for this card is $620, which was a week ago. I peg the expected sale value at $750, and that would mean that the total of all three is $2,250.
And the 2018 Panini Status at PSA 10.
This is just the base card. We don't have a price paid because we pulled it ourselves. The latest comp was about $150 a week ago, and I pegged the expected sale value to be about $150.
Are you telling me that you didn't do the math on how many packs we purchased?
No,
and then
I did.
Average? Okay.
I did not.
And
what's
up,
the final card?
The final card is the 2018 Panini Status at a PSA 9.
Again, this is pack pulled, so we don't have a price paid. The latest comp is $65. That's from just a few days ago, and I peg the expected value to be $65 as well. So the total spent on these 16 cards is $8,609. The total expected sale value of these cards when they hit auction with PWCC, I've pegged at $28,765. So once you subtract the PWCC fee, which is going to average out to be about 12%, that results in $25,313 in net income. So we're still going to be about $5,000 shy of recouping our $30,000 outlay on Lucas. But here's the really fun part. Let's now look at what we've got left. The majority of our PC, thankfully, is still intact, and it's still growing by the day. We've got a few dozen Lucas out for grading with both PSA and BGS right now that we can't include in this review, obviously, but it includes some sweet 101s and some gold rookie cards, and we will share them with you when they come in. For now, let's take a look at what we do have. I pegged the current value of the Luca PC at about $110,000, which means that we've made about $105,000 in unrealized gains from collecting Luca cards over the past year. Not bad. Especially considering what an absolute thrill it is to collect Luca and follow his career, and we'd be pretty darn happy collecting Luca even if we didn't make a dime. And of course, these are, and it's important to note, unrealized gains, and they're going to stay unrealized. That's for sure. So let's look through the PC now. Up first, we have an in-person autograph, and that's why it's coming up first. We have a sentimental connection to this card. We got it at a Luca and Mavericks game at the Staples Center. And if you flip the card around, you can see the ticket stub from that game. And we just got it encapsulated by PSA. The next card is the BGS 9 copy of the 2018-19 National Treasures rookie patch autograph out of 99. Definitely one of the centerpieces of RPC and a beautiful card. Up next, we have the 2018-19 Gold Prism Luca BGS 9.5. This card and the National Treasures card, we were very fortunate to acquire. Like we said, the National Treasures was May last year. This card was acquired in July last year when those cards were dirt cheap compared to the premiums they would command now. The next card up is the 2019-20 Don Russ Net Marvels 1/1, Christina's perhaps favorite or one of her favorite cards. This one we also got for dirt cheap. We got it for like $550. Back when the set first came out, and now those cards have become much more popular than they were at release. The next card we have is one of three Luca Threads rookie 1/1s. This is a BGS 9.5. We can just show the other two threads as well. We're still trying to complete the set of the Threads 1/1s from Luca's rookie year. If you have a lead on any of those, please help us out. Christina's just shown two base cards and the Floor Generals insert. Those are really, really pretty fun cards. Up next, we have the 2019-20 Prism Far Out Black 1/1 Luka Doncic insert. Obviously, we love the theme of that card.
I also love this card because we met the designer of this card in January.
Yeah,
really dope. Really cool connection to that card. After that, we have another second-year Luka 1/1. We've got the Panini Status die cut, the third in our trio. This one we're keeping, BGS 9.5. We've got a Luka Rookie Revolution Parallel Chinese New Year Emerald, I think, right?
Yes.
Then we have a Cornerstones insert, BGS 9.5, very cheap, affordable, and pretty card. Of course, we had to keep one Pink Ice Luca rookie card from Prism for Christina. And then the final two Lucas in our PC is just a good old PSA 10 base card, one of the more than 10,000 out there, and a BGS 9.5, just because those are really fun cards to have as historical artifacts.
Gotta have one at least.
You gotta have one. I agree
exactly.
With that.
Yeah.
So
and we have two.
That is the story of our Luca collecting over the past year. Thank you, hobby gods, basketball gods. Thank you, Luca. It has been an absolute thrill. So next segment here, and it dovetails nicely, I think, with the Luca segment. I'm going to recap a collecting strategy that I alluded to in the show preview called BBCWW, Buy blue chips, wait, and watch. So last October at TradeFest, a friend of ours needed to sell some cheap Mahomes cards to get $55 in cash. I had the cash in my wallet, so I scooped up the cards from him, and I gave them to Will, the autograph guy, immediately to grade on a 45-day order. And here are the results. The first is the 2018 Select Patrick Mahomes Silver PSA 9. Sold this already for $75 and it ships out tomorrow, but just wanted to give it one good look because it's a beautiful card. The second card is the 2018 Prism Mahomes Green PSA 9. Sold this for $100. It also ships out tomorrow. Really like the way the green and the red of Mahomes' jersey contrast.
Christmas.
The third card is the 2017 Prism Mahomes Rookie Introductions PSA 10, which has not sold yet, but the market value is about $350. And I have no doubt that it eventually will sell and will end up, therefore, fetching about $525 for the three cards. And once you take out the grading fees that we put into these cards and the eBay fees, we're going to have about $422 left over, which is not a bad return on a $55 cash purchase last fall.
Not at all.
That's no, and that last, yeah, that last Mahomes, I really enjoy that. It's his back in black and white, so you see his name and jersey number,
yeah,
and the back of the helmet, and then you see him also like calling a play. It's a really nice card.
Yeah.
Now, when we bought
these, Brian?
It's a cool card.
Yeah.
When we bought these cards, there were literally no expectations that these cards would appreciate in value at all. I just had some money in my wallet. Someone had some cool looking cards to sell of a very talented quarterback that we all enjoy rooting for. 10 out of 10 times, I'm going to end up buying cards in that situation. I might not keep them for a long time, but I just love having cool cards, and I'm probably going to buy them at pretty much every opportunity that turns up. And I also just love the way cards look in slabs. I'm guilty of that. It does look official, and I love how they present in slabs. So I figured I would drop them off for grading since our group sub guy, Will, was right there at the event with us. Now, here's the point. In retrospect, I unintentionally stumbled upon a strategy that has been extremely effective in the hobby over the last few years. And I wasn't doing this deliberately, but it just, as you reflect on things, you start to notice trends. Here's that strategy. Just buy as much of the blue chip prospects and the goats as you can. High end, low end, prestigious brand, off brand. It really has not mattered. And then you just wait and watch. Now, this isn't the only way to enjoy collecting, far from it, and it's surely not the most successful strategy from a financial point of view, but it is elegant in its simplicity, and it is premised on the fundamental fact that the hobby buyer base has simply been experiencing incredible expansion, resulting in overwhelming demand, especially for the marquee athletes. And that's the core reason why the BBCWW strategy works. Now, interestingly, buying raw and sending to PSA in bulk submissions, which results in extremely lengthy turnaround times, sort of forces you to play the buy and wait game. Indeed, those absurdly long delays have helped me realize value increases that I would have left on the table had those cards come back earlier and I moved them right away. The turnaround time curse has turned out to be a gift. So, Brian, what do we think? What do you think about the buy blue chips, wait, and watch?
Agree with
strategy?
Him now, Brian.
Well, I actually like it a lot.
Of course you do.
Of course. No. It's a good way to, I think, really take on the hobby as a whole and to kind of try to maybe cut through some of the weeds of it. You know, if you have certain players that you really like and you just like watching them and you just want to watch, you know, you want to collect them just because you like them as a player, go ahead and do that. You know, there's nothing wrong with buying a player that you just like and you enjoy to watch. That is what you should be doing. But at the same time, it is important if you're thinking from like a collective kind of standpoint, if you really want, you know, maybe of that certain player that you love to watch, if you want some golds or some super rare cards, maybe you have to work in, you know, buying kind of through this method and then using those gains that you've realized for the card of your choice for, you know, whoever your player is. So I think it's, I really like, you know, just the idea of keeping it to good prospects and goats. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. And that's something I've experienced as well, as if you just go with the goats, go with people that you like collecting, you should do fairly well.
So let's use that as a segue into section 5 of today's show, which is, Brian, discussing some of his hobby wins and hobby losses.
Yeah, so, I mean, really just briefly, I mean, in terms of hobby wins, I mean, I think it is much easier to win with modern cards, I've noticed. Collecting the right cards, and a lot of it is about timing, essentially. Timing for cards to be the right price, taking the risk that others will not pay for it at that time. Older cards, I've kind of noticed, are much more condition sensitive. I think we've all noticed that, which can be problematic with grading. In general, that is why, you know, it's normal to collect the 90s players, PSA 8 or 9, compared to modern, where everybody's focusing really heavily on the PSA 10s. And obviously in the 90s, too, you still have PSA 10s, which hold a very high premium, but it's much harder to obtain those cards compared to some of these other grades, especially if you're trying to buy a raw card. Buying a card that was pulled, you know, either freshly in a pack that's been, you know, kept away for 20 years, probably isn't in the best condition, or has been pulled and is 30 years old, it's just not as good condition. So it's much easier if you're just going in. If you want to start, go with the modern, and you can, you know, go through grading that method. I think that's definitely a way to go. I think also the only time you lose is when you lose focus on what you are collecting. And I think that what I mean by that is maybe taking unnecessary risks on an unproven player. But with that risk, there can be a lot of reward as well, obviously. But I would say my biggest loss as a collector would be on Lauri Markkanen. I've spoken on him. I used to collect him a lot back when you guys were starting to collect Luka. And we're kind of getting more into modern cards. And I just really like Lauri. You know, I chose to collect him because I'm a Bulls fan. I think he's a good player. Yet, I think he most likely lacks the ability to be a GOAT. Somebody like Luka or LeBron or, you know, whoever your GOAT is. but in the discussion of a GOAT at this point in time, he's just not, he's not in that discussion. I think that's pretty reflective in his card prices. He stayed relatively flat for a while now. Basically the same amount of money I put in, I've gotten back, or not gotten back, but it's the same price that it is now. So I'm not necessarily looking to sell those cards either. I had no intention to do that. So that's one of those stories of where I'm just collecting a person that I wanted to collect, and I'm not looking to, you know, flip into getting even a better card of his. You know, I just kind of, I got my purple, I think out of, I can't remember if it's out of 199 or something like that, purple prism. That's my grail for Lauri Markkanen, and that's where that's where the road stops right now for me with him.
That's a sick card too.
It is a sick card, and that's the greatest part about it, is like, I'm just, anytime I want to look at a Lauri card, that's the card I would buy. Yeah. You know, but in terms of a more, you know, win story solidified for me would be purchasing a lot of the optic parallels back when the holos were on the rise. I chose to ignore the holo and focus on picking up raw copies of the parallels in that set. And this is for Luka, you know, the pink hyper, optic purple, optic shock, optic choice. Which saw much more gains because I recognized that the price inconsistency in the market. I realized that the holos were going up for a very high price. I was like, okay, well, that timing isn't right for me. So what the timing is right for me, though, is buying these, you know, parallels. And it ended up being pretty well for me. But even within that, I learned a lesson as well, because one of the cards that I liked a lot was the Optic Shock. And at that time, they were selling for like $5 and less for a card. And now the PSA 10 is selling for $400. So, you know, I only wish I had bought more of that specific card. And I kind of recognized, I was like, you know, this card just looks really well. I know that it hasn't really caught on yet, but I think there's potential. I didn't pull the trigger. It was partially because I was buying so many of the other ones at the same time, too. So I was kind of diversifying in that way. But, you know, I wish I had bought that. And it just kind of points you in the direction of there's always a $5 purchase that you can make where now, I mean, look at the PSA 10 is selling for $400. That's crazy. You know, like that is a price point where anybody can get in for the hobby. So there are those kind of those inconsistencies that you can find out on your own, but it's about that timing, taking that risk. Maybe you buy, you know, maybe 15 or 20 copies of the Optic Shock. And then, you know, you get, let's say half of them gem, you know, then you got some good money there. But obviously it doesn't always turn out that way, as we've discussed, you know, previously.
Right.
So I think in general, though, for me, buying players you like, and that is, for me, at this current time, Luka and Jordan, has always been a win for me. I haven't really, I would say, taken a big loss, necessarily. Everything's been pretty even, or more, at least.
Very well said. Very, very well said. Some pearls of wisdom in there. All right, let's go on to the final segment of today's show, which is Mail Days. And Brian will go first, and he's got some really fun ones.
Yeah, so first up is the Mosaic 2019 insert Got Game, and this is the reactive blue out of 99.
Nice.
So Luka Doncic, obviously, for anybody that's not watching this video right now, you can pick one of these up for $40 or $50. I paid actually $65 for it. The Mosaic hobby boxes right now are going crazy.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
But this came out of the retail, I believe.
So let's marinate on Mosaic for just a second, yeah. Because there's an interesting parallel to The Last Dance and Mosaic. So The Last Dance has been the only sports content that has been going on for like the last month or so. And then you had like the pre-build-up. So really it's been like a month and a half of Last Dance mania. And Mosaic is the only basketball product to have come out here in the recent past, in the last few weeks. So like it's gotten so much hobby attention on it. And, you know, there's another parallel to that. The Last Dance, Mosaic, and SGC. All three of these entities have had a moment in the sun, because of circumstances that have proven fortuitous to them and maybe not so much for others, but they have really had their moments and they've all, you know, done pretty well given their opportunity to do so.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great cards in this set, so you can check out. I mean, I'm sure on eBay there's, you know, so many, but for this specific card, you know, there's the green, there's an orange out of 25, blue out of 15, and the pink out of 10. So, if you don't like this one, get a different color. So next up is the 1998 Topps Chrome Preview Michael Jordan. So this card, currently, if you look at the PSA Pop Report, there's 65 nines, and then there's 9 tens with a total of 110 graded. So there's 26 PSA 8s. Not a lot of copies graded at all, especially if you compare it to the pops for, you know, the 1996 and even 1997. Currently, there's a lot of these selling on eBay, and just most recently at PSA 9, kind of over the last year, the history on that. If you picked one up a year ago, back in actually, I think it was maybe just right before September 2019, you could have picked it up for $50 basically. And then now, just recently, one sold for $600 at auction just a couple days ago. And, you know, there's been a few sales that have led up to that, but it's really seen a very high kind of price point. And I think it's due to the fact that, you know, you have the 1996 and 1997 chromes that are so popular, so to speak. What's your thoughts on that?
That's a phenomenal return on an extremely rare Jordan card, the Chrome Preview, and its big brother, the Preview Refractor. Those are two really nice cards. Still, it's staggering to see it selling for $600 as a PSA 9 for a base card. But it does match the trend we've seen in other eras, like such as the Panini era with LeBron cards and Kobe cards, and what we've seen you know, with Giannis and Optic, what we've seen with Brady and his early Prism cards. It's the logic of base cards and the appeal of them is for real, and especially when you got, you know, Brian, you rattled off the pop reports. Those are low pop reports.
Very low. 9 PSA 10s?
very.
It's because the centering on these is almost nearly impossible.
It's so tough.
It's worse than the 1996 and 97.
Well, congratulations on an awesome pickup.
Thanks. And then also, for just a nice little flash here, I got the Giannis, my first Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Wow.
NBA City Hollow cards.
Greek freak.
I picked this one up, and I think it looks great.
Very likely back-to-back NBA MVP, although LeBron definitely gave him a run for his money.
Yeah.
So very, very nice. Love the way the color pops on the NBA City Hollow.
Yeah.
Great card. All right, and quickly our mail day. So Christina, in fact, is going to steal the show. And while she shows you, I'm going to tell you a little bit. When Christina started picking up these Topps Project 2020 cards, I honestly just didn't get it yet. I was worried that the cards would just be small drawings and that they wouldn't be sports cards. And by sports cards, I mean items that incorporate art, technology, manufacturing, and photography. But it turns out that these cards only needed paper and ink. No shininess, no die cuts, no embossing required. The aesthetic these artists have created absolutely captures and crystallizes the mood of our era. And what I mean by that is, looking at these cards reminds me of walking around Grand Central Market in downtown LA. It's just one of those great functions of art, is that it evokes connections to places, ideas, and emotions. And hats off to Topps Project 2020 for having done that, and in fact, much more. So, very exciting cards. One of the cards, these cards all deserve their own time and appreciation, but we don't have the time for it here. But one of those cards was designed by Blake Jameson. It's the Don Mattingly. Blake Jameson was the first person that Christina interviewed on Christina's Corner. He's a very gracious guest. It was a tremendous privilege to have him.
You might even say Blake Jameson is why I spun off into Christina's Corner, because
indeed,
he was the one who contacted me and asked me if I wanted him to be a guest on the podcast after we talked about Project 2020.
I admire Blake's enthusiasm and entrepreneurial approach, because he has become a star of Topps Project 2020. And that card, it's really fun, beautiful card to look at. Christina, you picked up two of these at release, and how much did you pay for the bundle of two? About 20
total,
bucks a card, right?
Yeah, total it was 35 for the two, because I picked up one
each
of the, like, one at a bundle $15
so
price.
These cards come out, you know, 20 bucks a pop if you're buying one, and you get like a bundle deal if you buy more than one. So Christina, and that holds true for all the Topps Project 2020 cards. So Christina picked this up. She got two of them. So obviously we're keeping one, that one right there. The other one I threw on eBay today of the Don Mattingly. It sold for $150 within an hour. So these cards are doing exceptionally well in the secondary market, and just having the foresight to buy two of those Don Mattinglys and then being able to sell one of them has paid for all of our Topps Project 2020 pickups. And now we proudly display these cards on a shelf in our home, because they are just so nice looking, and the aesthetic that they create is awesome. So once more, hats off to Topps Project 2020, and Christina may have gently encouraged Kevin Hake to consider bringing something similar into the Panini fold.
Very gently.
I mean, it'd be so dope, you know.
And yeah. Brian, you wanted to highlight one of the Topps Project 2020 cards that you really like.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the Ricky Henderson, and it's by Matt Taylor. I just thought the aesthetics on this card were really good. I mean, all the cards I've seen have been amazing, but this one just reminded me of kind of like a retro 80s kind of vibe, and I don't know, I just really liked it. I think it's the colors really matched. It's kind of like a dark purple, bluish, kind of orange, yellow, pink. It's just the colors flow really well together.
Yeah, so, and it has the like reverberating Ricky Henderson's behind him.
Yeah.
Like the outline.
Right.
Like, so
it's kind of, which is like the, you know, the Metal Universe and a lot of other cards we've talked about.
You're a fan of the ghost player like behind him on the card. So I'm not surprised that you liked this one out of like the 70 plus that have been out so far.
So this card, like many of the early Topps Project 2020 cards, has a relatively smaller print run. So for those who don't know, the way the print run is determined on these cards is simply however many people buy them within the allotted window to buy them. That's how many Topps prints, and boom, you got a print run. So the earlier ones have print runs 1,500, 2,000, maybe up towards 3,000. And then the later ones, such as like the Ben Baller Trout that came out very recently, has a print run of 35,000.
Wow.
So we have very disparate print runs here. This particular one, the Matt Taylor Ricky Henderson, has a print run of 2,104. It was available, like all these cards, for $20 at release. Its current value on eBay is, it goes for about $100. So Brian, would you spend $100 on this card?
I mean, I might. I mean, if I was a baseball fan, and I'm not necessarily a baseball kind of guy, I like the sport and all, I would buy it. I would definitely buy it, but I don't know if I'm going to now.
Well,
but seeing you guys have these, like, just makes me want to buy it because they're so cool.
They're very, they almost transcend the hobby.
I know, that's the thing. Like, it's more than that. So I don't, it's,
they're display pieces.
I might just have to buy it.
Yeah, they're really cool, man. And you get to pick you get to pick what you like, because the artists all brought some very different elements to the table in terms of design. So you kind of get a wide range of stuff to pick from. That Ricky Henderson is a really sweet looking card.
It is.
Topps Project 2020 has become very, very popular. You know,
so Matt Taylor has three cards out as of today. The Henderson, which was card number 21. The Jeter, which was card number 39. And then the Taylor, which was, or I'm sorry, the Griffey, which was card number 53.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. So I posted some stuff about Topps Project 2020 on Instagram today, and I got a couple of commenters and a couple of private messages from people like telling me like this is their favorite sports card set ever made. Like, wow.
Yeah.
That
I
is
would add
high
Topps
praise.
Project 2020 to your list of things that took off during the pandemic.
Well, it sure did. sure did. Okay, guys. That will conclude episode 30. Oh, I almost forgot. We have one last mail day to show off. Oh, and Christina, we have let's show this mail day up. This was the influence of Christina, 2019-20 NBA hoops basketball, a sealed box. After getting so excited about hoops last week, we just had to buy one. Christina, what are we going to do with this box?
Oh, we're totally going to hold it and then sell it, because that's all I do with my wax.
Yeah, right. When are we going to rip it is the question. It's been a long time.
I don't know. It has been. It's been
wax.
A really long time since we opened. Maybe we'll do it during the live on Sunday.
That'd be
like
fun.
After the contest, or like we'll take a break in the middle of the contest and just rip some wax. I'm getting a lot of glare on this. There you go.
Nice. Well, you know, you are getting a lot of glare on it. And as a final thought here in today's episode, the reason she's getting a lot of glare is because we got new lights in our podcast studio.
We got a new podcast studio.
This studio. We got a beautiful Beckett magazine behind Brian that actually features the great collector Frankie3500 on Instagram. He actually has a spread in that very issue about his Michael Jordan collection from when he was younger. You know, behind me, we got my bookshelves, and we got some fun Beckett and other stuff framed. We got some cards. We got our National Treasures boxes.
We got some law books.
Just to never forget the pain and suffering of law school. So, you know, new podcast studio. It's nice. It's cozy. It's fun. Wasn't easy. Christina really was the carpenter here.
The reason I was not active on social media this week was because I was building the podcast studio, including the brick wall behind me.
Yes, she was.
No, I didn't actually build that, but I did. But I'm a mason now.
Yeah. All right, guys. Cool. Thank you for tuning to episode 30. We can't wait to see you guys back for episode 31. Next week. Don't forget, this Sunday night, we're doing our live giveaway on YouTube of that 2018-19 seller box. And thanks once again for helping us get 2,000 subscribers so fast.
Yeah. See you on Sunday.
See you Sunday. No more Last Dance, but this is the next best thing.
See you Sunday.
Sunday is fun day. You should make an ice cream sundae on Sunday and watch us do the contest while you eat it.
Sunday for Sundays?
Yeah.
Sunday for Sundays.
Sundays Ooh. For Sunday.
Ooh. It is the day of rest, after all.
It's the Sabbath.
Sunday for Sundays. We'll end on that note.
All right, guys. Stay healthy. Stay safe. See you Sunday.